Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM DB2 Web Query Tool and DB2 Table Editor Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the conference over to Ms. Diane McCollum. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Welcome, everybody, to two of IBM's best-kept secrets, DB2 Access Tools for use from the web or... My name is Diane McCollum, and I will be your host today. I am the worldwide sales leader for IBM's DB2 for Z and DB2 and IMS tools. Our speaker today is Sean Sullivan, a DB2 tools product expert. He is from Rocket Software, an IBM development partner. So now I'd like to turn it over to Sean. Sean?
Thank you, Diane. And thank you, everybody, for dialing into the call today. The two products that are being used in a variety of solutions at customer sites that I'm going to discuss are the DB2 Table Editor and the DB2 Web Query. These two tools have fairly simple tasks before them, as their names describe, editing data and querying data. The way they help the customers, however, solve problems that aren't necessarily addressed by other tools is in the way that they are deployed and the way that they give access to the DB2 data. I'm going to now quickly go over the agenda that's on page 2 of the presentation. We're going to start out by taking a look at data editing and controlled access, which is going to be in the sphere of influence of the DB2 Table Editor tool. We're going to move to SQL Web Access, which sounds like it would be something that comes under the DB2 Web Query tool, but as you're going to see, there's going to be a bit of an overlap between the two of them. And as we close out towards the end, there will be a slide or two about resources, where you can go on the web to find out about these tools. A quick word about my role as a product expert, so that you have an idea as to where the insights that I'm going to share with you come from. My role as a product expert for the last 7 or 8 years with the DB2 tools has been to assist customers during evaluation, deployment, post-deployment, training, and getting the most out of the products. And so most of what I'm going to discuss with you today is experiences I've had on-site at customers observing and helping them use these tools. So moving to page 3, the general objectives of the call: giving your employees access to DB2 data from the web rather than necessarily directly from the desktop. The big ticket item on that is the no client code as a requirement, and I'll discuss that a little bit more as we go into the cases that we're going to take a look at. Editing as well as reading the data being a requirement is something that both of these tools address. However, they both also can shut the editing off and allow the customer to merely do a reading. And so although it is a DB2 table editor tool, it can also be used as a data browsing tool. Creating insert, update, delete for data without writing the SQL. DB2 Table Editor tool, as we're going to see, is going to be able to cover quick form building that will be familiar to a number of users who have grown up in a predominantly GUI interface world. Which brings me to the next point of creating and editing GUI applications without writing the application code. You will be seeing some examples that some very high volume customers have used to quickly create, exactly as it says here, GUI applications for not just editing, but also viewing the code. And then finally, creating SQL queries. That is the first line of business intelligence is getting the data out of the database. And that will be a place where the DB2 web query tool, but as well the table editor tool will come into play. So skipping ahead to the next slide, DB2 table editor, data editing, and controlled access. And as we go into this, I'll describe exactly what I mean by controlled access as being the other side of the coin for data editing. So on slide 5, is a quick overview of the interface. The DB2 table editor tool's name speaks for itself. Its primary goal is to edit data. It comes in three flavors: an ISPF interface, a Windows GUI interface, which is the screen, the picture that's in the middle, and a Java interface, which is the image that you see on the lower right in the foreground. The Java and the Windows interface look fairly close. However, the Windows interface is a full-blown Windows application. As you can see across the top, it has a variety of buttons, file buttons, and menus on it, whereas the Java implementation is merely an editing session. Most customers who deploy on desktops deploy the Windows application if they're going to choose to deploy on the web, on the desktop. Now, as I said earlier, one of the purposes of this is web access. That is where the Java component comes in. The Java component may be a standalone component that you could run on a Windows desktop or on a Linux desktop or on an AIX desktop, etc. But because of its Java nature, as we'll see, it can also be deployed via a web browser to run as an applet. All three have close to the same functionality, but because they're built in different interfaces, different delivery methods, they have not quite yet reached the goal of converging to have 100% of the same functions. So in the picture that you see here on the left, the ISPF table editor was doing a block delete. In the middle, the Windows table editor is doing a block delete. The Java table editor, which can also do a block delete, is showing inserts, updates, and deletes. Now, all three of them can perform all of those functions. It will be only in the ultimate details, if anyone ever becomes involved in evaluating them, where some of the features have not quite converged. I'm going to move ahead to the next screen. Very little to say here. The ISPF editor is for DB2 on Z-Series data. The Windows GUI is for DB2 on Z-Series, Linux, Unix, or Windows. The GUI database access, it's the same application for all platforms. The only difference as to whether it's going to a Z-Series or Windows, Linux, Unix is the license key. So it would be an identical interface regardless of which platform DB2 is being accessed. The slight surprise is these are not separate products. When we get to the resource section at the end, on the DB2 IMS tools page, DB2 table editor for ZOS, that package includes all three of these components, ISPF, Windows, and Java. They're all independent of one another. A customer, as we'll see on the next slide, may use the ISPF, or they may use the Windows, or they may deploy it through the web as a Java application. So moving to the next slide. As I said, it's a fairly simple product, but it solves a problem. One particular customer where I did a 3-hour training to cover the table editor, at the end of the training, 10 of the 12 students in the class decided that they were going to exclusively use the GUI interface. Two decided that they would use the ISPF interface. The distinction between those two groups was principally one of age, or actually I should say of experience. The people who had been for years working in an ISPF editor or ISPF interfaces in general all felt that the ISPF table editor was straightforward and simple and was exactly what they wanted. However, the other 10 who had been in the industry for perhaps 2 to 5 years and had spent 8 years through high school and college using Microsoft Access and other GUI access tools where the back-end database was transparent to them as to what the data source was, took a shine to the GUI interface. They could naturally just leverage the skills and the comfort level that they had and get right to work rather than spending their time learning an ISPF interface. So it was a very simple problem. There was no additional cost. When the customer had acquired the ISPF DB2 table editor for ZOS, they had been pleasantly surprised to find out that it also came with the two GUI interfaces that were a very easy rollout. So moving ahead to page 8, this is one of the secrets, best-kept secrets, of DB2 table editor. Originally, it was named DB2 Forms because in addition to the full-screen grid editor that was viewed earlier, table editor comes with a form builder. In case the idea of a form isn't familiar to you, there's one shown on the screen. Fields are placed on the screen that are tied to columns of data. A user makes selections. In this particular case, the user has selected Nevada, fruit soda, and a scenario called actual. And then the display at the bottom of the screen, this editing form brings up a list of the values that match those criteria at the top. The appearance here is that this would be a lookup form. However, the not shown, the grid at the bottom where it says details is fully editable. So here is a place where we have an example of what I referred to earlier as controlled data access. There's SQL behind the scenes on these various selections being made that deliver the data for the lower details. At that point, the designer of the form had the option to disable editing and make this a pure lookup form or enable the editing aspect so that after the user makes selections in the non-editable state products and scenario, any values in the details that need to be tweaked or adjusted can easily be tweaked or adjusted in this particular screen. In the upper right, there's a button that says Sales. The function of that button is that there happens to be another form parallel to the profits called Sales that has similar fields, states, product, scenario, and details. And if the Sales button is clicked, this form will summon up the sibling form for Sales, transferring the current selections to it. Okay. So this GUI form for both lookup and editing is an aspect of table editor that the next set of slides is going to demonstrate a particular solution at one of the major customers. The form I'm showing here is a bare bones, very simple form, just to give an example of what the product can do. What this particular customer that I assisted at did, however, was they took this, the form builder, pretty much as far as one might expect someone to bring it. So here's the application that I assisted, and by assist, I can't take credit. I gave them minor tips and how-tos. They started with a master form that essentially was a set of buttons and a couple of drop-down lists. And the drop-down lists allow them to pick dates and DB2 subsystem IDs. Once they had selected those dates and subsystem IDs, if you take a moment to scan over the options that are on the various buttons, for example, the two in red at the top, subsystem services and zero counter fields, etc., each of these buttons will summon up a family of other forms, transferring to those forms the subsystem ID and the date that had been requested. This application was developed by the DB2 support group, and it was targeted at the group of 20 to 40 DBAs who routinely would be otherwise writing SQL or running spoofy queries or otherwise somehow writing queries directly against these tables. Moving on to the next slide, you see the result of selecting the subsystem services button. They got a new form giving a host of data based on the date and subsystem ID, which is still brought forward in the lower left-hand corner. From this panel, once they zoom in on any particular item, there are a set of buttons in the lower left that they placed for display all sysIDs, the history of the sysIDs, refresh the screen, a button on the right for memory, other buttons and controls around the screen. If you move forward to the next screen, I'm showing that it was not merely a two-tier application where the first screen launched, had 16 buttons that launched 16 forms. Some of the subforms within themselves had an array of buttons. And so they were able to build up a complex, easy-to-navigate application of information-delivering forms. Now, in this example, this is the way they had it built. It was completely lookup. So although the product they had acquired was DB2 Table Editor for ZOS, with the intention of being able to have ISPF editing sessions of their data. As they investigated the tool, they found that it had all of this extra functionality that filled this need. But it brings up the question I have at the top of the screen. How did they have the time or budget to create dozens of these forms? So the answer to that was that many programmers, GUI programmers, Java programmers, etc., take a look at the output that comes from Table Editor and say, I could write that myself. I'll sit down and in 2 or 3 weeks I'll give you a Java program that will do everything that does. Well, the answer is the DBAs, and if you go ahead to page 12, the DBAs who were doing this merely had to go through the following set of fairly brief steps. They, in the GUI interface, summon up a blank palette, double-click on it, and they got to a point where it was prompting them to add the name of the table or tables that they'd like to draw upon to get the data to populate the form. So they call for a table list. Move forward to page 13. They were limited themselves in this particular case to the DB2 performance monitor performance tables. But of course, any tables that were put into the filter that the user has read access on would be applicable for the form, for any given form being constructed. If you move forward to the next page, once the table was in place, it is from a very simple set of tools, a drag and drop interface. So in this case, they dragged a field onto the palette, and when the field arrived, it popped up and asked them which of the columns of the tables you've assigned would you like to have displayed in this field. If anyone listening has experience with GUI builders, then the small set of objects on the object bar on the right-hand side of this page will make sense. For the folks who don't, I'll give a quick overview of them. The arrow switches the cursor to the selection tool. The uppercase A allows you to add text. The field with the red arrow coming from it is a text box that will display a single data element, a single value. On the row below it, the next box shows also a single value, but allows text wrapping. So if it were a comment field, it could display wrapped text rather than having to have an extremely long field. The next two are the very familiar combo box or drop-down box, a list box. The colored palette is a display grid. That was the one that was used on the earlier example I had that had state, product, scenario with details down at the bottom. The details box that showed multiple rows and multiple columns was constructed from that. The next icon is a button. The rest of them are pretty much for cosmetics, for doing the design of the form. So what we have here is a very small bag of tricks, but the permutations and combinations of them will allow a customer to make a very robust table editing or data lookup for controlled data access form. If you'll advance to the next page, page 15, a combo box has been added in the lower right, and the combo box reacts to the selection or gives a selection list. The selection list is developed by an SQL query that the designer of the form embeds in the form, embeds in that object, rather. So while we'd like to say it was a non-programming interface, there is SQL programming in that the programmer needs to craft the select statement that they'd like to put in if they would like to populate by means of where clauses or more sophisticated SQL than simply drawing from the column. So what the DBAs were able to do, again, after a minimal amount of training, was since they already knew all the SQL that they'd been running for years, it was merely a matter, mostly a matter, I should say, of the cosmetic design and designing the flow. From there, it was a fairly fast and, from their account, fun and enjoyable experience to pull the fields and buttons onto the forms, paste their SQL in, and be off and running in very little time. So I have a comment on there saying that useful sets of forms can be quickly developed. How quickly? We'll take a look at the next page. There's a fairly complicated form. This is a form that I made for a DB2 Linux, Unix, Windows customer. Once again, it was a DBA. It was a beginner DBA who didn't know the DB2 catalog very well and needed to be giving advice to people in the shop who were writing SQL about what tables to join to other tables and just navigating the catalog in general. So the action of this form is that in the upper left, it lists all the types of tables that are in the database. In this one, there are only type tables and views, but if there were aliases or global temporary tables in a DB2 for Z series, they show up in this list as well. The owners of tables, of the type of table, are listed. When an owner is selected, all of the tables belonging to that owner show up. When one of those tables is selected, the rest of the applicable fields populate. So the column list is a subset of the column definitions. Other tables in the database that have that same column name in it. Down below, indexes, primary foreign keys that might be related to the table, and then who has authorizations or authorities on that table. In this particular case, the public has select, but the DB2 admin on the database this is pointing to has control. Okay. If it had been a view that it had been selected, in the middle of the form, going horizontally, it will give the create statement that created the view as pulled from sysviews. If it had been an alias, then the base table gets entered. In the middle of the form, because I've given this form out to a couple other customers who have been evaluating, there's a button. And one of the many functions, and again, these are not functions that the user programs into the button, but these are functions that are hard-coded from and taken from a pick list. It says, this space available, click to send an email, send ideas to my email address. So when that button is clicked, when this form is running, either from a Windows application or from a web browser, it summons up the local email client with the email addressed to me so that the customer can put in their question or suggestions for how the form should work and send it off to me. So the number of functions and tricks that are built in, pre-coded, to Table Editor allow for a very robust application. At the end of all of this, this form took me, and I do admit I know the tool, it took me 2 hours to create from start to finish. That's from thinking about what should be in the form while driving home from work, writing the SQL, designing the layout, and getting it all done. Okay, it was a 1 hour drive home and 1 hour while sitting at home actually moving the pieces around and putting it together. So once someone gets the hang of the very small bag of tricks, it is a very fast development time to get from start to finish to the useful product. So yes, a Java developer or a Visual Basic developer could write programs for this, but it would be on an order of magnitude, or maybe two sometimes, greater than it takes to pull it together. Okay. So finally, as the theme of the presentation promised, by using the Java component, any of the forms that are developed, and the development of those forms does take place in a Windows environment. Developing in a web browser is not yet something that's feasible for the speed and the repetition and iterations that developers need to go through. So developing on a Windows platform, the saved object is quickly and easily deployed via a web browser. It is deployed as an applet rather than a servlet, but the functionality will be the same. Okay, and I'm sorry if I forgot to mention, move forward please to page 17 for a view of one of the earlier forms being deployed in a web browser. The process of deploying one of these to the web browser is explained on page 18. When a developer of the form finishes it, tests it, and is happy, they may, if they wish, type up or otherwise write up an HTML web page that has this brief snippet of HTML on page 18 embedded in it. Or by clicking three times within the table editor application, it will write this particular snippet that can then be copied and pasted into any pre-existing web page. So that will be step one. Step two is on the web server, whoever owns the web server simply deposits. This is not an install process. It's a copying and depositing or an FTPing of files. They copy the set of files as shown in this picture. The one at the top in the lower left corner, db2forms.jar, that is the standalone Java application that ships with Table Editor. The rest of that, the db2 drivers that are going to be used, and the db2 Table Editor license keys. And as I mentioned earlier, it is the same application regardless of the platform of DB2 that's being accessed. It is simply a matter of which of those license keys, dbhost.lic, work.lic, or workgroup.lic, is available. The final piece that needs to be there is the actual HTML page that's housing the DB2 table editor form. Okay, so that's a one-time setup. It's not even an install process. It's drop the files into the HTTP server. Okay. Finally, if you move to page 19, when a user goes to the particular web page that houses the link to the HTML, the user clicks on the HTML and up will come the table editor form delivered to their web browser as an applet. The one big requirement that needs to be kept in mind is that because it is an applet, it does require the DB2 JDBC applet service to be available. And so currently, even though the data may be on a Z-Series machine, the web server needs to be on a platform that has access to a DB2 client with a DB2 Type 2 driver with a DB2 JDBC applet service. So all of the customers who have this deployed running through the web, regardless of whether their back-end database is on a Z-Series or Windows, Linux, or Unix, they all have their web application server on a Windows, Linux, or Unix platform. And that does include Linux on Z-Series. Now, that's going to conclude the part of the presentation that focuses directly on Table Editor. So I'd like to sum it up again as Table Editor presents the option for a full-screen editing grid. That's a dedicated editing session. It presents the option for a combination lookup and editing session, such as the one that's on page 19. Or it provides the option for a pure lookup application, such as the set of forms that we took a look at that were browsing DB2 performance data, DB2 system data, etc. those types, at least some subsets of them, are available through the ISPF table editor, through a Windows client, or ultimately, as the presentation was aimed at, via a web browser. So with that, I'd like to move forward to DB2 Web Query. Page 20 is the title page. And as I said at the beginning, these tools have a very simple goal. DB2 Web Query's goal is to get the data. So on page 21, again, repeating myself, Web Query has a name that speaks for itself. It's for the end user to get the data. During its development, what some of the test end users who were taking a look at it, the comments they had were that it was moving towards being a web version of Spoofy. So it's not a reporting tool, per se. It's a querying tool. By that I mean, as we're about to see, it's going to connect to the database, query the data, return the results, and allow the user to download them. But it is not in the business of reformatting the data for viewing while inside the application. And that's what I'm referring to as reporting. Like Table Editor, there's a single application that's DB2 Web Query. It simply comes with different license keys. And so whether there's access to DB2 for Z-Series or DB2 for Windows, Linux, Unix, purely depends on which license key has been purchased and supplied in the Web Query installation. I'd like to move forward to page 22 for a quick look at the interface. Web Query installs under a web application server, such as WebSphere. It runs as a servlet, as opposed to Table Editor that was running as an applet. So it runs as a servlet. It's running back on the web application server. What you see on the left, the user gets a list of the tables available. By selecting a table, the tool automatically will generate a basic SQL query. As the user proceeds, the user gets to view the actual results set being returned. And then on page 23, the user proceeds, if the data was satisfactory, to decide what to do with it. Now, the what to do with it question is whether they would like to leave the data and go back and do another query, or they would like to download the data, display it in another application, get it out of the web query tool itself, have it be attached to an email and sent off to some other source. Or, if you notice in the lower part of the screen, move it directly into Excel rather than downloading it, or reload it into a DB2 table. The other question that the user decides is what format the downloaded or otherwise transformed data will be in. HTML, fixed width, formatted text, delimited text is the most popular because it's extremely compatible with both Excel and Lotus 1-2-3. Or at the bottom, XML, if it's destined for an XML application. So here I've selected delimited text and download. And then when the process button is clicked, it downloads and is openable directly in a spreadsheet. So it's a fairly straightforward process for the user to go from the list of tables to having the data present on their desktop system to go ahead and get to work with whatever types of manipulations they need to do. Right. So So with that as a positioning of what the tool is, I'd like to take a quick look at how some customers have used it. Right. So the first case cuts across practically every customer who has ever taken a look at the product. The problem they were solving is not how will my users write SQL. The problem they were solving is how am I going to avoid having to install and maintain this tool on hundreds of desktops, and how will, applying fix packs and making sure that everybody is up to date, etc. So the question that it has solved for virtually every customer has been this one. They will install it in one place on the web application server. Some customers have been so big that they've needed to install it on more than one web application server. But still, it's minimal compared to what those extremely large ones would have had to do if they needed to put a desktop client on every user's desktop. Okay. It's a very straightforward question. It's a very straightforward answer as to what it does. So I'm going to move forward to page 25. So there is no free lunch. While this solution does avoid having to do the installs on a large number of desktops, because servlet technology is a bit more complicated at the back end than applet technology is, we don't get away with simply dropping some files into a directory as we do with DB2 Table Editor. And so the customers I've dealt with have, before they solve their problem, they have to solve a set of problems such as is shown on here. Okay, what platform should the WebSphere be on? What type of driver, type 2 or type 4? Everyone is now migrating to type 4 that I've been working with recently. What about connecting to non-DB2 JDBC drivers? Well, as it turns out, one of the problems that WebQuery will solve is it's written to the JDBC standard. So while it's called DB2 WebQuery Tool, and it's developed and tested on DB2 and Informix, because it's written to the JDBC standard, customers use it to connect to non-DB2 sources that also adhere to the JDBC standard. So as we'll see in a moment, we have the customer that I was working with here used WebQuery principally to connect to DB2, but also has it configured to connect to Oracle and to Teradata. The next two questions, though, it is just something that each site has to deal with. The user will not be in a Windows desktop when they're in WebQuery. They will be inside the web browser. And so, as such, they don't have access to everything that they had access to on the Windows desktop. So there is that step that we took a look at a couple pages back, where the final step will be download the data so they can get off and running with their Windows applications. However, it is a smoother, less painful, especially for the less experienced, newer people in the field. It's less a painful experience than running a query in an ISPF session and then figuring out how to FTP or otherwise download the data from the mainframe to their desktop. On the other hand, it's also no longer in an ISPF session. And so will there be a loss of ISPF functionality? And that will be one of the questions that we'll see addressed in one of the cases coming up on the following pages. So let's take a look at how some customers have implemented WebQuery to solve these types of problems. If you go to page 26, a very large customer went through that previous set of decisions, and they settled as follows. WebSphere was deployed on a Linux for Z-Series system on a ZVM LPAR. What that allowed them to do was install a Linux DB2 on the Z-Linux. And at that time, they decided to use a Type 2 driver. Eventually, they changed over to a Type 4 driver. But what that DB2 client on the Z-Linux allowed them to easily set up and maintain was the web query connection under WebSphere connecting through that DB2 driver off to a large number of DB2 for Z-Series subsystems around their enterprise. And by large number, I mean, depending on how many they had configured at any time, between 100 and 150. But likewise, because they also wanted to go to some of the non-DB2 data sources, they were able to put the non-DB2 JDBC drivers for Informix, Oracle, and Teradata also under this Linux operating system. Okay. So a key thing that they were able to exploit about WebQuery is that it wasn't important to WebQuery as to which platform of operating system it was running on. What WebQuery cares about is that it runs inside of WebSphere. So WebQuery is agnostic as to whether the WebSphere application was directly on the Z-Series machine, whether it was on a Linux server that was on a standalone workstation, or whether the WebSphere application server were on a Windows machine or on a Unix-based or AIX machine. Okay, so that flexibility gave them the ability to put WebQuery on and WebSphere combination on any platform they needed without having to worry about those requirements. After getting it through 5 years in this configuration, they've now decided that they have the expertise and the flexibility to expand to put the WebQuery WebSphere installation directly on the Z-Series operating system rather than on the Z-Linux. And so they're going to go ahead and expand this. Now if you'll go ahead to page 27, what you'll see is there's a place where I haven't mentioned yet that table editor and web query come together and cooperate. Because this customer put their infrastructure on the Linux rather than directly on Z-Series, the DB2 client that was available for Linux provided them with a JDBC infrastructure with a DB2 applet service, et cetera, that's necessary for DB2 table editor. If WebSphere is in such an environment, then table editor and web query can combine so that the table editor forms, the lookup forms, or the full editing sessions or ad hoc editing sessions can be pulled up from within WebQuery itself. And so here is a user who has come in to do querying but has also decided to take a quick look at making some edits to a table. So the earlier table editor deployment that I briefly discussed can be done, rather than as a standalone on the web application server, it can be done under WebSphere. Now, if you move ahead to page 28, well, I did say there was no free lunch. Once it's installed, the work is done, and it's like an all-you-can-eat lunch. In the future, when the time comes to do upgrades and maintenance for WebQuery, it was merely, for this customer, a high satisfaction point, it was merely a point of FTPing a single file onto the Linux server, and then using the WebSphere admin console to deploy it. So the maintenance for this was a 10-minute process when the fix packs came out. Okay, and in the end, this customer was servicing an impressive number of Informix, Oracle, and DB2 systems. If you'll move ahead to slide 29, I'll take a look at case 2 for WebQuery. What this other customer was doing was replacing an ISPF-based query tool. They likewise did not want to be installing a Windows client on everyone's desktop, but they faced the issue when they had the realization that since it's going to be running in a web browser rather than in an ISPF session, they would be losing their ability to set up MVS batch jobs. So what they asked about, and we were able to help guide them through, was they needed the ability, not so much for the MVS batch, but to be able to run queries in an unattended mode in the off hours. Now, this is not a built-in function of WebQuery, whereby WebQuery clicks a button and schedules a job. But WebQuery itself comes as what's called a SOAP server. And for people who might not be familiar with it, SOAP is Simple Object Access Protocol. You may have heard of it as web services. You may have heard of it in the context of .NET. But it's a different approach. To oversimplify it, being a SOAP server means that the application has an extremely simple Java API with a very small set of commands. So what we help guide this customer with is the following. The WebQuery as a SOAP server, right out of the box, supplies a sample SOAP client and what's called a WSDL file that defines the handful, six or seven command requests that are supported. This SOAP interface on page 30, the SOAP interface in and of itself is not meant to be useful, but it's meant to be a programming example that, once again, a customer can take and run with to develop their own SOAP application. On page 31, here was the result. By taking a look at the sample application, a junior Java programmer took 2 hours to write a small Java application. And what this Java application allowed them to do was, from a command line, issue a command that would connect to WebQuery, ask WebQuery to pull up a particular query, run the query, format the results in a designated format, and return the result set to a particular location. So, for example, on the lower part of this, on the top line, it says Java class path, blah, blah, blah. At the end, one of the handful of commands is SOAP retrieval. It retrieves a query. On the second line, it tells it the URL for where the web query is located. It tells it then the name of the database to connect to via the web query. It tells it the owner of the query, the name of the query. And then it tells it HTML, the format that it would like it downloaded in. And then finally it tells it the location that it would like the file, location and file name for the download. So while most users themselves would not want to write such a command line, this command line could be embedded in any other application, or it could be written as into a Windows or AIX batch or script file where the user simply supplies input parameters. Those command lines then this customer was putting under some type of a scheduler, either a Windows or an AIX scheduler, to kick them off at a particular time or when a particular event had taken place. If you'll move ahead to slide 32, a third customer had an issue where the problem they needed solved was they were moving all of their applications into a web environment, and they were grappling with the idea that many applications that were going to access various resources require some type of login or sign-on. And so in order to allow their users to sign on once, they employed the facet of web query whereby it allows, it's called HTTP post, and they use the sample shown here so that by signing on to an initial page with a user ID and password or initial application, they could be delivered directly into web query without having to go through the login again. Okay. So by exploiting not merely the install in one place, deploy everywhere model, by employing the other concepts that are part and parcel with being a web application, WebQuery was able to step up to the plate on these last two customer requests and already have the infrastructure in place to solve the problems that they were posed by moving into this new environment as opposed to moving the previous environment of ISPF. Okay, with that, I'd like to wrap up my discussion of these particular cases. I would imagine that there's any number of questions about infrastructure or future directions, etc. There are resources on page 33, DB2 Table Editor, DB2 Web Query, a quick summary of those tools. On 34 are the links for various web pages that IBM supports that give the data sheets, tutorials, and other information about DB2 Table Editor and DB2 Web Query. With that, I'd like to open it up for questions that anyone has patiently saved up during this presentation.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal us by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you are joining using a speakerphone, please remember to release your mute function before signaling. Once again, that is star 1 for questions, and we'll pause for a moment. And it appears we have no questions, but I would like to give the audience another opportunity. If you do have any questions, please press star 1 now, and we'll pause for another moment. And we have a question from Raja Chilamila.
Yeah, the question is like, we are kind of looking for more editing functions, so we think like, before asking the questions, we do have DB2 Connect and DB2 Control Center. And having that, we are still looking for more advanced functions of editing data, like copying a row of information and changing that and saving back to the table. Is that functionality available in this table editor?
Yes. In both the ISPF and the Windows and the Java implementations, the user may select a particular row as a template, insert a duplicate, and then it will be up to the user at that point. Nothing has gone to the database yet. It will be up to the user to make modifications to that duplicate row if they're using it merely as a template to create a new row. The ISPF table editor has a bulk copying, so that if there's a set of rows that need to be copied to be a template for a new set of rows, it can do that in bulk. In the Windows and Java, they do have to be done one at a time right now. But that is one of those places that the products are working on convergence of the feature. So yes, it can use an existing row, copy it, let the user use it, and then at the user's discretion, commit that new row to the database.
Thank you. One more question.
Yes?
Okay. Can we do a partial copy, means like only selecting two columns in a row, then pasting and modifying and committing?
No, it will copy the entire row, and let me modify that. The insert duplicate function will make an entire duplicate of the row. It also has an insert blank. You would use in that case the insert blank row and then copy and paste just the two columns from your seed row. So it's a case where you'd have to use the functionality as a tool rather than necessarily having it packaged up as a single function.
Thank you very much. Can I ask one more question? This
sure.
might be the last one. Today, with the DB2 control center, we are experiencing locking issues with the DB2. Can we foresee same kind of problems with these two tools?
The locking is going to be controlled by DB2 as the applications try to connect to the multiple applications or users try to connect to the same tables. DB2 table editor exploits a feature of SQL as an option such that as the user is setting up their editing session, they may choose to do an explicit lock of the table. What that means is, rather than waiting for DB2 to acquire the lock for you, the user may specify to lock the table, and then it will be until they end their session. The editing session at the table is when the lock will be released. The one customer I had who I know was using that was the registrar of a university. She couldn't allow for the possibility that while she was editing one of her particular tables, that if she took a break for a phone call, that someone else might come in and lock the table up. And so she was selecting to do a lock mode of exclusive explicitly. So every time she opened this particular table, she was guaranteed that no one else would get to it. Otherwise, the way Table Editor acquires the locks is only when the user is interacting with the database. So while it's drawing the data out to display it, there's a shared lock. And while it's actually performing one of the updates, there'll be an update or exclusive lock. I'd have to take a look. But otherwise, both products leave the locking up to DB2.
Thank you very much.
And it appears there are no further questions. Ms. McCollum, I'll turn the call over to you for closing remarks.
Thank you, everyone, for taking time out of your busy schedules to attend two of IBM's best-kept secrets, DB2 access tools for use from the web or. A special thanks goes out to Sean Sullivan from Rocket Software for being our speaker today. If you should have any further questions, please do not hesitate to contact me, and I will be glad to put you in touch with the DB2 Tools sales or technical sales specialist. Our next DB2 Tools presentation will be on May 3rd. Watch the website for further details. Goodbye and have a great day. And thanks again.
And that does conclude our conference. We thank you all for your participation. Have a great day.